You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to Aryan Britannia. Today's date is Monday the 2nd of September 2019 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. Well, I'm afraid I don't have my co-host Max Musson with me today, so it's just going to be a monologue from me, which we will break up with a bit of music halfway through, like we usually do when we have a solo podcast. The year is just flying past, isn't it? It's autumn already. We're now into autumn and we've got 2 months to go until we leave the European Union. And it really does look like we are actually going to leave the EU under Prime Minister Johnson at the helm of the ship. And the big news last week was the novel way that he has try to ensure that we do actually leave. And this is the process which is called proroguing of Parliament. And it basically means that Parliament has a break. And this is something that it's not out of the ordinary. It goes on every time before they have a general election. They prorogue the Parliament. And it goes on every time that they are going to announce a new programme, a new party policy. And of course, Boris Johnson, being the new Prime Minister, he has all these policies that he wants to put before the House. So in order to do that, he has to go and see the Queen. And the Queen will then give a Queen's speech outlining the new policy and the new direction for the government. And then the government will discuss that. The House of Commons will discuss that, basically. It's just a normal procedure that goes on all the time. The reason why there is all this complaint about it is because the Ramoners wanted to spend the 4 weeks that they have, because I think they come back at the end of September. They wanted to spend the 4 weeks that they have before Brexit leaving day. They wanted to spend that doing all they can to sabotage actually leaving. And this is why they're furious about this. They keep calling it a coup. They're the ones that are engaged in trying to engineer a coup. They're the ones that have been talking for the last couple of weeks about a unity government that has not been voted for by anyone and just putting that in place with a leader of the country that has not been voted for by anyone except for by them. Everything they've been talking about has been about hijacking the democratic process. And what Boris Johnson has done is entirely in accord with the Constitution, entirely in accord with the democratic process. I'm looking forward to hearing what his plans are, what the direction is for the new government. And the timing of it is, it's very clever of him to do this, because all he's actually done is suspended Parliament for 3 or 4 days, something like that. Because they had a month off anyway, they had their summer recess. And then what he's done is he's extended that for 3 days, I think, or 4 days. And then we get the Queen's speech, which will be on October the 15th. And then for 2 weeks, they have to debate what the Queen's speech is. That's procedure, which will take us right up to Halloween, which is when we are supposed to be leaving. Of course, part of this is also to show the European Union that he means business, because he has said, we will be leaving whether we have a deal or not. And the European Union have assumed that the EU-ophiles, the traitors that we have in government, that they would be able to put a stop to this. The EU has obviously been relying on them to put a stop to this. And of course, they've been saying, well, we think that leaving the EU without a deal is going to be disastrous, so we have to do all we can to stop it. But in actual fact, that's our leverage that we have against the EU, because it's going to be far worse for them than it is for Britain. If there isn't a deal, they're going to lose 40 billion euros for a start, because that was part of the withdrawal deal, was that we were going to have to pay that 40 billion euros. Also part of the withdrawal deal is the backstop, which means splitting Northern Ireland off from the rest of the UK. And obviously, Boris Johnson doesn't want that. But the only leverage he has over the EU is the fact that we could leave without a deal. So besides the fact that these traitors are trying to say that they're only doing this because they want what is best for Britain, they're trying to actually prevent a deal being done by wanting to take that off the table, because that's the only leverage that Boris Johnson has. Their behaviour has been absolutely disgusting, really, when you think about it. They've tried to organise protests outside of Jacob Rees-Mogg's house, where he has his family there, and his, I think it's 8 children that he has. They wanted to go outside there and invade his home, basically, invade the sanctity of his home. They've done this before. They've gone on his doorstep and harangued his children and told them what a horrible, nasty man their father is. I mean, really disgusting below-the-belt behaviour, but it is exactly what we would expect from leftists. We've had various members of the opposition demanding to see the Queen. We've had the head of the Liberal Democrats doing that. We've had Jeremy Corbyn doing that. I think we've had somebody else from the Tories, one of the Remainers from the Tories. They've all been demanding to go and see the Queen to put a stop to this. Again, which is very hypocritical, because they've been blasting Boris for interrupting her holiday in Scotland to get her to okay this proroguing of Parliament. And of course, she's refused to see any of them. And we've seen the footage on the television, all these Remainers moaning and wailing and screeching outside the Houses of Parliament. Some real dregs of society there, the most effeminate, limp-wristed specimens of the white male that I've ever seen for a long time, poncing around, dancing about in their blue and yellow get-ups. And it really is quite stark, the difference between them and between Brexiteers. Your average Brexiteer is a patriot. He's likely to be a supporter of traditionalism, traditional male, female roles, probably against immigration, and probably lives outside the main multicultural zones, certainly outside of London. And of course, when you see this on the news, it's always concentrating on London, which is 60% non-white. So it gives the image that there's bad feeling about this, and that people don't want this to actually happen. And that's a lie, because the majority of the country support this. The majority of the country just want to get on with Brexit. 3 years now, they've been prevaricating and doing all they can to put a stop to it. And now they're saying, oh, it's too quick. It's too quick. We're not going to have enough time to debate Brexit in the Houses of Parliament if we only have 2 days to do it because of this proroguing. They've had 3 years to debate Brexit. Everybody is sick to the back teeth of Brexit. Apparently, it's been the longest running parliamentary session in the history of the British Parliament, just talking about Brexit. So it needed to be brought to a halt, basically. Everything about this is entirely constitutional. It's entirely within the normal practice of the government. What is not in keeping with the rest of the government is all the treason that we're seeing. We're seeing the Speaker of the House, John Bercow, the Squeaker of the House. He's supposed to be totally impartial, and he has come out completely on the side of the Remainers. He's allowed votes to be carried and special votes to be had in order to prevent no-deal Brexit when Theresa May was Prime Minister, and yet he wouldn't allow any special votes to be had by the Brexiteer side. And when it came down to deciding just what they did want to do, because they decided they didn't want Theresa May's deal, they didn't want a no-deal Brexit, they didn't want a general election, so it was suggested, well, you tell us what you do want then, And there were four or five different ideas that were put forward, and every single one of them failed. There was no unity at all. The only unity there is, and the only mandate there is the fact that there was a referendum, and the referendum question was, do you want to stay within the EU, or do you want to leave the EU? Nothing on there about doing a deal. We were offered David Cameron's deal. If people had voted to stay within the EU, we would have had David Cameron's deal and stayed within the EU. People didn't want that. So where they get the idea that people voted for another deal, people voted for Theresa May to do another deal, I don't know. That was not what the question was on the referendum. Ever since the referendum result, they have tried to mischaracterise what Brexit is. First off, they were calling it a hard Brexit or a soft Brexit. And of course, hard Brexit is actually what people voted for. People voted to leave the customs union, leave the Schengen zone, and leave the European Court of Human Rights. I mean, that's basically it. That's what the EU is. What the EU is a continuation of various phases where the EU brought the countries of Europe closer together and under an administration that was not accountable to the peoples of Europe, basically. And it started off with just a financial union, just a customs union, trade union sort of thing. And then it went on from there to the euro and everybody having the same currency, which thankfully Britain didn't join. And then you got the Schengen zone with the open borders. Now they're talking about having a European army. And it's all based on the same plan that they had with the Soviet Union, where there was no real democracy. The people that were put in charge, nobody had a choice in that. Nobody could actually get rid of the people that were put in charge. And you've got exactly the same thing now. You've got the European Union Commission, which nobody votes for. Nobody knows who they are. Nobody's really heard of them before. They make all the legislation. And then you've got the European Union MPs who have no power whatsoever. They all get 5 minutes to say what they want to say, but none of them can actually put forward any legislation. And it's just a rubber stamping exercise that they vote on something. They can't change it. They have to vote on it. And it's just window dressing, the fact that they have this parliament there. It's just to give this illusion that there is some kind of democracy that's actually going on here. And it's not a democracy, and the British people want to leave it. And these traitors that are trying to sabotage it, that is exactly what they are. They are traitors. You look outside the Houses of Parliament, it's all European Union flags. It's the flags of a foreign organisation. A foreign organisation that seeks to usurp the sovereignty of Britain. And outside our Houses of Parliament, it's covered in these flags and surrounded by these idiots that support all of this, that pretend that they want sovereignty. It's like the Scottish National Party that have the gall to call themselves nationalists when they are nothing whatsoever to do with nationalist principles. They just want to separate from England and then become a part of the EU. You don't get any more internationalist or any more globalist than the Scottish Nationalist Party, and yet they claim to be nationalists. It's the same with these EU Remainers. They claim to be wanting what's best for Britain, and yet what they really want is communism. They want this communism that's going under the name of the European Union today. So we've got 2 months until we actually leave. We've got a month where they're not going to actually be in Parliament. I believe we've got a couple of days this week where they will, obviously the traitors will be doing all they can to scupper this. I don't think that they will call for a general election because they know that Jeremy Corbyn would lose if there is a general election. If they do decide to do that and call for a general election, then it's up to Boris Johnson to decide when that election will be. And he could very well suggest that we don't have this general election until after we've actually left the EU. And in order to do that, to get that election in, they would have to have a vote of no confidence in Boris, and they'd have to win it. Another great thing that Boris has done is he has said that if any Tories vote against his policies, his Brexit policies, then they will be out. They will not be put forward next time, in the next election. They will not be put forward as Conservative candidates in their constituencies. They will be kicked out, basically. And that is because they're all traitors. I mean, we are really seeing the loyalties that the people that are supposedly representing our interests in government, where their loyalties really lie in this. It's really exposed the sham that is British democracy. If you think it's well over 3 years now since we voted to leave. And people were expecting to leave the very next day. They were expecting David Cameron to act to action Article 50. Don't forget, he said that he would stay in office and he would action Article 50 if we voted to leave. He didn't stay in office. He resigned the very next day, and he resigned because he said that we needed to have somebody leading the country who believed in Brexit, that campaigned to leave the EU. And we didn't get that. We had Theresa May foisted upon us, who did all she could to prevaricate and delay and mess things up. She didn't even activate Article 50 for another year. They dillied and dallied for a year. And then once it was activated, she set up a special Brexit negotiating team. And that was all window dressing. And the Brexit negotiating team arranged what they wanted. They said what they wanted to the EU. And then Theresa May came out at the end, just before the 2 years were up, and said, well, I've gone and done my own deal. So the Brexit negotiating team resigned in disgust, because what they had been doing was obviously just a complete waste of time. And then Theresa May's deal completely failed, basically. Three votes they had on it, this Chequers deal of hers that wasn't liked by anybody. I think that was deliberately done as well. I think she just wanted to give people Brexit fatigue and delay for time. And of course, in that time, in that 3 years, we've had constant fear propaganda from the BBC. I mean, even when Boris has done this proroguing, about 10% of the television time has been given to people that support Brexit, and 90% of the time has been given to people that are trying to sabotage it. There's been very little talk about Boris's plans for the direction of the government to take. Nothing at all about the likelihood of what's likely to be within his Queen's speech. It's all been people shrieking and screaming about what an affront to democracy this is, what a threat to democracy this is. We've got Sadiq Khan likening Boris Johnson to Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, of course. We've had Ruth Davidson, the bull dyke from Scotland that leads the Conservative Party up there. She's resigned, and I'm not sure how much the Conservative majority is. Max was talking about it the other week in an episode of Area in Britannia, and I can't recall whether he said it was just one or just two, was all that the Conservatives had in a majority. So now that Ruth Davidson has stepped down and resigned, the Conservative Party may not even have a majority anymore. So they could end up saying, well, we need to have a general election anyway, and since Boris Johnson is the Prime Minister in office at the moment, he could say, I want that general election to take place in November the whatever date. Because don't forget, if you're going to have a general election, you've got to have 6 weeks of electioneering. The Houses of Parliament are going to be on holiday for the next month. So if they do have a general election, the earliest the date could be set for is 14th or the 15th of November. So I think we will probably end up having a Christmas general election anyway by Christmas, even if this isn't the exact process of affairs that it goes through. I think we will see a general election by Christmas. But we could see one by November. But either way, it is looking very, very likely that we will actually leave on the 31st of October, and the European Union will have egg all over its face when we do, for believing that its stooges in the British government would be able to sabotage it. Because that is obviously what they've been counting on all this time. They've been counting on their stooges messing it all up. And to be honest, most people, I think, have believed that the traitors would mess it all up. It is a surprise to us that it does look like we will be actually leaving on the 31st of October. And I do hope we leave with no deal, a proper clean break Brexit, a World Trade Organization terms Brexit, which is what people voted for, of course. So we got all that to look forward to. And of course, we'll be covering that here at Arian Britannia. Got some movement news last week as well. I think I spoke about this a little bit on the Daily Nationalist about the spy that infiltrated Generation Identity UK. And he wasn't really able to find out very much. What he did find out was freely given him by the leadership of Generation Identity UK, which really doesn't say much for their common sense. The news story was about how Generation Identity had infiltrated the British Navy and how there were members of GI UK that were going to be on the Trident nuclear submarines. And when I read that, I thought, well, what idiot was telling people that they were in the Navy and exactly where they were? I mean, nobody needs to know what career somebody has. And if any of our listeners are in the Navy or the Army, I do recommend that you don't actually tell other nationalists that you're in the Navy or the Army or even the police. Because if there is a spy there, then they will be able to use that against you. But it wasn't that this spy managed to gain the confidence of the particular Navy members. It was the fact that the leadership itself told this spy that and quite freely and openly gave this information out. I believe it's a policy that they have of people using their real names and giving them all the details of what they do. And of course, that's just, it just leaves them open to attack, which is, you would really think that they would have thought better than that, because they do claim to have older people that are guiding them. They have a sort of elder think tank, which is made up of older nationalists who are supposed to be able to say, well, look, these are the mistakes we did, and we don't want you to make the same mistakes. And yet, that is a, you know, that's a schoolboy mistake, that is, to be giving out private information to all and sundry. And they also let this guy get in there onto the private chats with this think tank, and they allowed him to be the photographer, so he was taking photographs of all the people that were in there. I mean, what better job could a spy have than as photographer? You really would have thought that they would have double-checked everything. And he was a Jew as well, and you would have thought that the fact that he was Jewish, that might actually tip them off to the fact that his loyalties might not actually be to Generation Identity UK, but might actually be to left-wing Jews. Of course, there are right-wing Jews, and they do claim to support movements like Tommy Robinson and Britain First. But even then, their loyalties are to Israel and to Zionism, as we've seen with Avi Yemeni and the so-called Brian of London and their recent attacks on Mark Cullett and secret sources and Shazia Hobbs, and the way that it's okay for them to support Israel, but it's not okay for white British people to not want white British people to be replaced. So there are a lot of things that really should have tipped the leadership of Generation Identity UK off that this was not somebody they should be trusting. And then on top of that, you've got the fact that they invited people along to their conference that they were explicitly told not to invite by the Generation Identity Leadership in Europe. Don't forget, GI UK is an offshoot of the European franchise, and they are probably the last actual country to get together a Generation Identity. They were very new, basically, as an organisation. You would have thought that they would have been doing their best to obey the orders that they were getting from the continent there, but they didn't. They expressly ignored express instructions not to invite millennial woes, which I think was wrong of them. We want to have dialogue between the different nationalist groups and the different strands of nationalism. We don't want to make enemies. We need to have a dialogue between us. But obviously the leadership of GI, they didn't want that. And the leadership of GI UK should have gone along with the leadership. I mean, that's why you have leadership. That's why you have a hierarchy. That's why you have people above and people below that are supposed to be taking orders. And if you can't take the orders and you go against the orders, then that means that your organization has no discipline. That means that your organization is going to fail. And GI UK, because of this, they've now been kicked out of the Generation Identity European movement. And they tried to do their best to cover this up. They made a video and said, oh no, everything's fine. And I saw a tweet from their leadership, Ben Jones, when this was being reported by Hope Not Hate. And he was saying, oh no, not that old chestnut again that we've been asked to leave. And of course he has been asked to leave. And what they've done is they've changed the name from Generation Identity UK, and they're now called the Identitarian Movement of Great Britain and Ireland. And I don't think a lot of thought actually went into that. Isn't it the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland? Obviously, they're not saying it's the United Kingdom, but it does sort of imply that if you're going to say the movement of Great Britain and Ireland, Northern Ireland is a part of Great Britain. So maybe I'm reading more into it, or maybe it's not supposed to be intended to be understood like that. But you know, maybe the Irish might be a little bit offended at that, or the Northern Irish, and to call it the Identitarian Movement, I'm not quite sure that identitarian is a good word to use. I tend to support Mark Cullett in this. He's pointed out before that it kind of sounds like Jehovah's Witnesses or like some of these evangelical churches, identitarians. Obviously, I'm Christian Identity. I would say I'm an identity Christian. It's not part of the identitarian movement. And also the website is still exactly the same. They've still got all the GI UK logos, which Generation Identity Europe have asked them not to use. They've told them not to use this stuff. So they're a bit behind with actually changing the website. And the new logo that they have got, Identitarian Movement of Great Britain and Ireland, they're just using a slightly different logo. It's still the same Sparta logo, that chevron that's pointing upwards, only this time it's got a couple of little legs at the side of it, which, you know, it really does look cheap. It looks like they're still trying to copy Generation Identity. I really don't know what's gone wrong there, to be honest, because watching the interviews with Generation Identity UK, I thought these guys are pretty good. They're pretty intelligent. When I've watched documentaries where spies have infiltrated them before, I thought they came across very, very well. Anybody that was watching that would be wondering why it is that they're supposed to be hating this group, because these young people seem to be interested in learning what they can, not going out and getting drunk, keeping themselves fit, being a good example, having clubs where they get together and discuss literature, you know, just sort of positive things. I thought, well, this group looks good. But it really seems to be have fallen apart here by lack of discipline, lack of doing what they were told to do by the higher ups in the movement, and now they just look like a cheap copy of Generation Identity, and they're even using As I say, they're even using the similar logo. What they've got is somebody's mocked up a new banner which says Identitarian Movement of Great Britain and Ireland, and that's it. That's all they have, and that got sent out with their emails. But nothing's changed, as I say, on the Generation Identity site. So they've really sort of gone down in my estimation with all of this, which is a great shame, because we do need a nationalist movement in Britain that is driven by young people, and one that has older people involved in it as well, to prevent them from making the same mistakes that they made in the past. And of course, that was the main problem, I think, with National Action. You had young people leading other young people that weren't really listening to older people, that in a lot of ways mocked the older people and the older nationalists, when they could have possibly have helped them from making some of the mistakes that they did. And you know, you got the same thing here with Generation Identity. They were ignoring the people that they had in their think tank. They ignored them. They ignored the people on the continent that were saying, look, it's part of our policy not to have people that are anti-Semitic as speakers. And Woz is not anti-Semitic, but he has been characterized as that in the press. And that's what matters, is what the press think of them. Because if it got out that Woz had talked at this conference, the press would have been full of it, saying Generation Identity UK had this anti-Semite speaking there. So whether Woz is an anti-Semite or not is totally irrelevant. The press are going to call him that because Hope Not Hate did. And they should have known that. They should have known that's what the point of this is, because they know that Woz isn't an anti-Semite. He's friends with Martin Selner and Brittany Pettibone. They know that he's not an anti-Semite, but the press think that he is. So that was a really silly mistake that Ben Jones made there. Let's hope that he learns from it and he doesn't make similar mistakes with this new identitarian movement of Great Britain and Ireland. And of course, I do wish him all the best in that endeavour. Okay, we've reached halfway through, so now it's time for a bit of music. And this is a chap called Saint Friendship. I don't know that much about him. I think he's from America. He's got an absolutely amazing voice and a really original style of music here. And this is Saint Friendship, and the track is called More Than a Man.
Devoted in love like a tempest, hard in the fall. He was born with a call. Serpent, father said you would be working. Stranger at dawn, been weaving his charms. Tempter, sickening pull of the darkness. Soil and sand made me more than a man. Senseless, fucked in the love like a mistress. Riding the fire, been broken and wrong. Sit on it. Two-tone fiddler's song, Italy chorus. Les ancêtres. Le mot et la lumière. Made me more than a man. Senseless.
You've just been listening to Saint Friendship, and you can find more of his work at soundcloud.com. Getting back to the news from the last week, we did have a news story that I really would have expected to have been covered a little bit more in the national press, but it doesn't seem to have been. And this appeared on Breitbart, talking about the number of acid attacks happening in Britain. Now, we haven't heard that much about acid recently over the last year. We've heard a lot about stabbings. We've got had a massive increase in stabbings that are occurring, but we haven't heard that much about acid attacks. And actually, just before I get into the acid attacks, now I bring up stabbings, I caught the beginning of a BBC news programme the other night, and it was about how they're trying to prevent these stabbings from happening. And they had the leader of a really nasty gang from Bristol. I think they were called the Aggie Gang, obviously the Aggro Gang, and they were responsible for starting a crack epidemic in Bristol, and they were involved in lots of stabbings and attacks and drug dealing, and they had the leader of it, and he was apparently now leading this new alternative to prison that the Bristol police are offering to youngsters that are getting involved in drug dealing and stabbing. And what they are offered, well, you can either go to prison and serve out your sentence, or you can go on this course and we'll give you free driving lessons, we'll give you free education, we'll teach you how to run your own business, as if all of that is in any way some kind of alternative to prison, some kind of deterrent. It's not a deterrent at all. What it means is that the young thugs that have been caught with knives will just go on this course and they'll learn how to drive a car, and they can then drive their drugs out of the city to the villages. They'll learn how to improve their drug business with the business training, and by learning how to read and write, they'll also learn how to communicate better. It just means that they will improve their drug dealing businesses. I couldn't believe it. I thought maybe it was a satire at first, a satire of the clown world that we live in, that youngsters that have been caught stabbing one another, instead of being sent to prison, they're going to be given driving lessons. And young people have such a problem with learning to drive nowadays anyway. It's going to cost them thousands of pounds. To think that somebody that goes out stabbing others is now going to be given driving lessons for free is absolutely sickening. They didn't actually mention acid attacks in this news story. It was specifically about knives, but no doubt they'll probably try doing some kind of similar program with acid attacks. But the number of acid attacks in the capital is at record levels, having increased over tenfold in 6 years, with young children among the victims. The figures were obtained by the Evening Standard following a Freedom of Information request to London's Metropolitan Police Service, and revealed that in 2012 there were 66 acid attacks, with that figure rising to 752 in 2018. So a tenfold increase there. And I can remember doing a programme with Florian Geyer about this in the Daily Nationalist, and we worked out that at the time there was one acid attack a day, and we were horrified at that, that there was one acid attack a day. There was 350 in a year, and that's now doubled. It's now 752 in 2018. No doubt 2019 it will probably be nearer 1,000. And this is a horrific form of violence that originates in the non-white communities that never would have been heard of in Britain if it wasn't for multiculturalism. This can be directly attributed to multiculturalism. Of those attacks there, the 752, 17 were against children under the age of 10, including a 2-year-old boy who had acid thrown at him whilst his parents took him for a walk in his pram near his Islington home in 2017. And what this shows us is that these people that are engaging in this sort of behaviour, they do not operate under the same moral standards as the rest of humanity. They couldn't care less about the fact that a 2-year-old kid is going to get hit by the acid. They may even be deliberately targeting a two-year-old child with the acid. And yet the government and the BBC, they think the way to deal with this is to show the effects of this on the television. They think if they show the effects of somebody who's had acid thrown at them, then these thugs aren't going to want to do that anymore. The same as they will put stabbing storylines into the soap operas because they think that that will prevent people from stabbing one another. It doesn't. It has the opposite effect. People see that and they think, wow, if I do that, then people will really have respect for me because they'll be terrified that I will do that to them. It encourages this sort of thing, the same as the sex education and the schools that encourages the children to go out and have sex. It doesn't prevent teenage pregnancies. It encourages it. They project their own standards onto these non-whites. And as we know, they don't have the same standards as us. If you were to show the effect of acid on a two-year-old child to a white man, he'd be horrified. But there's no way that he would entertain the idea of throwing acid in the first place. If you show it to some Negro gangbanger, they're just going to think, well, that's going to be a good way to get my own back on this person that owes me £100 for drugs money. I'll throw acid at his child. They think in a completely different way to the way that we do. And we project our own sensibilities and our own morals onto these non-whites. And it's completely unjustified. And especially when you look at Negroes, they never even came out with a system of law. They never had a legal system, let alone thought to themselves about the golden rule of treat other people the way that you yourself would like to be treated. There's no evidence of that ever occurring in Africa. And yet we assume that Negroes understand that and they have a conscience and they naturally will want to obey the law. They don't naturally want to obey the law. They see it as the white man's law. They don't understand it. I mean, we've had programs in the past where these Negroes, instead of actually hiring lawyers, they've gone and hired witch doctors to put curses on the people that have been involved in the trial, because they believe in the supernatural more than they do in the legal system. And of course, this is why they will always plead not guilty, even when they obviously are guilty, because they think that there may be some act of God or whatever that is actually going to find them innocent. They don't understand the legal system. They don't understand why they are being prosecuted by these other people that aren't even related to the person that they attacked. They don't understand that a crime against one is a crime against all, because they just don't think in that way. They're not able to think of these abstract concepts. And you look at the Muslims and the Hindus, and they're sort of halfway between a Negro and a white man, and they're just as confused about these concepts. These acid attacks, they originated in India, where you have this honor culture where women can dishonor their family, and if they dishonor their family, then the males in that family are entitled to attack that female. And using acid, sadly, has become one of the ways that they do this, where they scar these people for life for showing a bit of ankle in a photograph on their social media account. Dr. Simon Harding, Associate Professor in Criminology at the University of West London, told the newspaper that acid has become a weapon of choice, with the rise in acid attacks coinciding with a rise in knife crime in 2017 and 2018. And of course, the way that they've tried to deal with this, they've tried to make cleaning products illegal and hard to get hold of, the same that they have made knives unable to get hold of. You can't even buy kitchen knives now in some of the supermarkets in London, but they'll just move on to using something else. Dr. Simon Harding said it can be used in robberies, burglaries, revenge attacks, during thefts of mopeds, or to intimidate witnesses, the leading criminologist said, with the newspaper finding the data revealed that religious or racial hatred and domestic violence were also amongst the motivations found. That's where the motivations began. That's where it began. As I was saying, it was this honor culture that they had in India and Pakistan, and acid would be used to attack these women so that they would be disfigured, so that they would be spoiled. And you also had this effect there that, well, if she won't have me, then nobody else can have her, and I will spoil her so that nobody else will want this woman ever again. So that's the original motivation for it. But now it has spread out. Now that people have started using it in London for those sort of attacks, the gangsters have seen it as well. The black gangbangers, they've seen that the Indians use this on their women, and they thought, well, this is great. We can carry this around with us, and we won't get an instant prison sentence like we would if we had a knife. It's much easier to conceal it, and it will leave a much more horrible scar than a knife. We could use this, and instead of actually killing this person, we can scar them for life. So whenever anybody sees them, they will have to say who it was that did it, and then everybody will be terrified of the person that did it, and they'll get respect and all the other ways that these gangs work, and the way that they think that they will get respect from people. So because of the importation of these non-whites into our country, this horrific way that they use to attack their own women, it's now spread out to being used for burglaries, thefts of mopeds, anything that a weapon could be used for. And these gangs are now using it for that. While the form of assault has been more common in developing countries such as Bangladesh, Pakistan and India, where it is used as a form of punishment in religious-based honour crimes and in personal disputes, police revealed in 2017 that the UK was one of the world's worst countries for acid attacks. So the United Kingdom is now being put into the same sentence as Bangladesh, Pakistan and India, all countries in the third world. We know that Sweden is up there with Africa for rapes now because of multiculturalism, and now Britain is up there with Bangladesh, Pakistan and other third world countries for acid attacks. This is the vibrancy, this is the enrichment that diversity has brought to our countries, a diversity in ways that you can be maimed. Government figures released last year revealed that there were on average 15 vitriolic attacks in the UK every day, with three quarters taking place in London. Remember, as I was saying, when I did that programme with Florian Geyer, it was just one attack a day. 15 times that now. London has sadly become the acid attack hotspot in the Western world, Dr. Harding said, of the trend. And of course, if guns were legal, I have no doubt London would be the centre of the gun attacks hotspot in the Western world, because it's so multicultural there. They're using acid because it's not so easy to get hold of guns. They will kill one another and maim one another in whatever way they can. They will use whatever weapon comes to hand because they're not very good at having control over their emotions. The summer of 2017 saw a crime wave in the capital involving muggers on mopeds using acid during robberies, with one black teen, being responsible for five robbery acid attacks taking place in just 84 minutes in London in July 2017. And that shows you what little value they place on other people. Five people were maimed by this one teen that was just trying to rob their phone or rob whatever they actually had on them as he was driving past on a moped. And they say that these people enrich our communities, they bring vibrancy to our communities. There is no sense of community with these people. You don't understand what community is. They're just out for themselves. And I'm just so sad that we still have white people that have to live in these multicultural centres, because they're absolute hellholes. If people can get out, they should. Well, we've also got a new law that Tony Blair is calling for. And he did this last week with this Tony Blair think tank that he has. It's actually called the Tony Blair think tank. He's calling for a new law allowing for hate groups to be designated and punished before they turn to violence in order to tackle far-right extremists. according to a report by Tony Blair's think tank, which also seeks powers to ban marches and media appearances. So what is that saying? That is saying, before anybody even commits a crime, he wants there to be a law to punish people. So people that are non-violent, that abhor violence, that say that we don't support violence, and they haven't actually committed any crimes, Tony Blair thinks that they should be designated and punished simply for wrongthink. That's what it's saying there, simply for having a different opinion to the establishment opinion. Tony Blair thinks you should be locked up. The law could sit alongside proscription powers, banning groups concerned with terrorism, but would not be directly linked to violence or terrorism. So at the moment, they have to say, well, there's been a violent act that has happened, so we're arresting you, or you're involved in terrorism, so we are arresting you. He just wants people to just be arrested just because he doesn't like them, I guess, just because he doesn't like their opinion. Rather, it would designate hate groups as organisations that spread intolerance and antipathy towards people of a different race, religion, gender, or nationality, the report said. So if you are intolerant of black crime, say, he wants to ban you. If you are intolerant of Muslim grooming gangs, he wants to ban you. Basically, for thought crime, for having a different opinion. Offences related to designation as a hate group should be treated as civil, not criminal, the think tank recommends. So who is it that's going to decide who these hate groups are, who these groups are that need to be banned and locked up before they even commit any crimes? It doesn't actually tell us. Of course, in Britain, it would be Hope Not Hate. In America, it would be the ADL. And they're basically just organisations that are trying to silence the opposition. We have a three-party system in Britain, and they are all on the same page as far as diversity, multiculturalism, and progressivism is concerned. The real opposition, the real alternative, is nationalism. And, of course, they just want to silence all nationalists, regardless of whether they've committed any crimes. That's what this is about. That's what this think tank is saying. Even when they haven't committed any crimes, we think there should be some kind of a law to lock these people up. The authors acknowledge that the issue of linking violent and non-violent extremism is contentious. Well, yes, of course that's contentious. Whether somebody's actually carried out violence at all, or whether someone is completely non-violent and a pacifist, are two entirely different things. But if you got the wrong opinion, then just for complaining about something, that, according to them, that's the same as physically attacking someone. Steps would need to be taken to protect free speech, they say. Without the hint of irony there, that what they are actually suggesting, it would do away with free speech entirely. The recommendations and conclusions are based on analysis of the overlap between four non-violent far-right groups. Britain First, For Britain, the British National Party, and Generation Identity England, and the ideology of the terrorist Anders Breivik, who murdered 77 people in Norway in 2011. And of course, the fallacy in this is that if Anders Breivik, in his manifesto, had written that the sky was blue, and then these nationalist groups here had also said that the sky was blue, then they're going to say here that that's the equivalent of supporting his ideology. They've done the same thing recently with Brenton Tarrant, with his attack on the mosque in New Zealand. And they tried to say that anybody that talks about replacement migration, that they obviously support Brenton Tarrant, which is absolute nonsense. Brenton Tarrant pointed out easily observable facts, the same as, I dare say, Anders Breivik also pointed out facts. I mean, it's a fact that Donald Trump is the president of America. Brenton Tarrant spoke about Trump. If you agree that Donald Trump is the president of America, and Brenton Tarrant also agrees, that doesn't mean you support his ideology. Anders Breivik, I mean, I haven't read his manifesto, but I dare say he did point out the fact that Europe was being invaded by all these foreigners, and these foreigners were replacing the white people who aren't producing enough to replace themselves with their reproduction rate. Doesn't mean you support Anders Breivik's ideology. mean, this logic here that this Tony Blair think tank have come up with, this is the same logic that we see with Hope Not Hate. And it's not logic. It's illogical. It's insane to be thinking this sort of thing. The Tony Blair Institute has called for a working definition of extremism. Well, that would be good. I would like to see them attempt that because, of course, the whole point of them having all these hate speech laws is because it's such a nebulous term and it doesn't actually define anything or what people say. It's completely arbitrary. If a left-wing group or the media or Hope Not Hate, they decide they don't like what you are saying, they will accuse you of being an extremist, regardless of whether you've actually broken the law or not. They call for a working definition of extremism which could be used as a tool by government, law enforcement and institutions to tackle individuals and groups that spread hateful ideas but fall short of advocating violence. And of course, how can you say that it's hateful to want to save the white race? Why is it hateful to want to avert the genocide of white people? Why is it hateful to want white people to marry other whites and produce white babies? What's so hateful about loving your own people and loving your own family? If you do love someone, then obviously you are going to hate anything that harms the person that is the object of your love. Nationalism is the highest form of love that there is. It's completely platonic love. It's not sexual love. It's not lust. It's a love for your own family and a wish for what is best for your own family. It's not about spreading hateful ideas. It's about spreading love among your own people. And of course, in this bland world of everything being equal, what they think of as love is simply sex. It's simply lust. And they don't understand that hate is the opposite side of the coin to love. And you cannot actually have love without hate. You cannot love anyone unless you actually hate what it is, anything that is likely to harm them. And again, this seems to have just escaped them. These people are absolutely delusional in the ideas that they come out with. It is also calling for further efforts to curb far-right hate online, including working with social media companies to define the limits of acceptable content. Well, how about what's legal and what's illegal? It's illegal to incite violence. It's illegal to incite people to carry out violence. Surely that is good enough. We don't need these private think tanks making up their own laws and forcing social media companies to go along with them. Social media companies are already arbitrary in who they wish to silence. You could take Radio Aryan, for instance. We had a Twitter account. We didn't even have one flagged tweet. And because the Times went and whined about us to Twitter, Twitter removed our Twitter account. Simple as that. We hadn't broken any laws. But simply because the Times didn't like our opinions, they got us silenced from there. As Mina Sadiq, a policy advisor at the Institute, said, these groups are far from innocuous. Only last month, Generation Identity England activists gathered outside the Tower of London, dressed as ISIS militants, and simulated the beheading of two anti-racism activists. It is time that policymakers acted by defining extremism and designating hateful groups to stop such obviously malicious acts. Well, that's not malicious, is it? That is pointing out the threat that ISIS militants pose and that the people that are actually facilitating these ISIS militants and facilitating them coming into Europe where they can carry out these attacks, the people that are facilitating that are the anti-racism activists. I mean, that's a good bit of activism there that they engaged in outside the Tower of London. That should get people thinking. It's not like they are actually carrying out any kind of violent act. What they're trying to do is prevent the carrying out of violent acts. I mean, that's what this is all about. This is what nationalism is all about. We can see a time coming in the future where the forces of law and order break down, which is not going to be far from now, because we can see only 5% of all crimes actually get solved by the police. We can see a time where the forces of law and order are going to break down and there is going to be ethnic conflict in our countries and there is going to be the equivalent of a war on the streets unless something is done to stop the invasion. That is the only possible outcome that there can be from multiculturalism. All you have to do is look back in history and every single war that there has ever been has been between two competing peoples over one territory. And if you put two or three different peoples together within that one territory, they will either fight each other until one of them is on top, or they'll all interbreed together and destroy the original ethnicity that was there in the first place. Which is, of course, what the European Union is all about. Coudenhove Kalergi wanted to see the European people blended out with African Negroes until they became similar to the Egyptian Arabs and see them all ruled over by an elite group of Jews at the top. And that is, of course, what the EU is. This is what we are trying to prevent. I mean, surely that's got to be the most hateful thing in the world, to want to genocide an entire people through breeding them out. That is the actual definition of what genocide is. And that's what we're trying to prevent. We are not the haters. We are the people who love our race. We love the diversity of the world and we wish to keep the races separate so that diversity is preserved. Anyway, thank you very much for listening today. Don't forget we do have a Bitcoin wallet and we do rely on your donations to keep Radio Aryan going. Next week we will have something else for you on Monday, and the week following that, hopefully, we will have Max Musson back. Thank you very much for listening, and of course, I do hope you all have a great week ahead of you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.